all, I would really like to thank the organizers of this session for inviting me here to talk about some of the research of our department. And I'm very honored to talk in this session that acknowledges the work of Jim Prosser. So I will be talking about several processes of both the nitrogen and methane cycle. But first I would like to present to you our department, because I will be presenting not only my own work, but also work of my colleagues. So I work at the Department of Microbiology, which is part of the Radboud University of Nijmegen. And Nijmegen is a city in the east of the Netherlands, which you can see over there. And it's just on the border with Germany. So here you can see a picture of Nijmegen from Google Earth. And the Department of Microbiology has just moved to a new building for the Faculty of Science, and we are now situated in the second wing of this building. Yeah, there's the mouse, over here. So these are the members of our group, and not everyone is in this picture because it was taken a few years ago during one of our lab day out trips to the zoo. So here I would like to acknowledge my co-workers whose work I will present. First of all, of course, our staff members, which are Huub Optenkamp over here, Mike Jetten, the head of our department, Jan Keltjens, and Mark Strauss, my direct supervisor. And these people were involved in all the research that I will present. And then I'll have to acknowledge Wim Geerts, Jacques van der Vossenberg, Marcus Schmidt, and Katinka van der Pas for their work on the anaerobic oxidation of ammonium. And I myself also work on the anaerobic oxidation of ammonium, and I'm doing cell biological research. So for the anaerobic oxidation of methane coupled to denitrification, I have to acknowledge Ashna Raghuwarsing here on the left, and Katharina Edwig, and also Katinka, who is also involved in that project. And then finally, for the work on foraminifera, I have to acknowledge Marcus Schmidt. So now you know whose work I will present. So the main two topics that I will talk about are the anaerobic oxidation of ammonium to dinitrogen gas with nitrite as the electron acceptor. And this process is called anammox. And the other topic that I will talk about is the anaerobic oxidation of methane coupled to denitrification, which in short is called DAMO. And the outline of my presentation will be as follows. First, I will focus on the nitrogen cycle with a very large emphasis on the anammox process. And my presentation also got 5 minutes shorter after listening to Jim Prosser's talk, because I'm just very shortly going to say something about two other processes of the nitrogen cycle, who are also being performed by rather unusual microorganisms. So first, the ammonium oxidation by Krenak Jota, but we've heard already all about that. And then denitrification, which is performed also by foraminifera. And now I would like to move over to the methane cycle, and more specifically to the anaerobic oxidation of methane coupled to denitrification. So, we've seen this a lot this afternoon. For a long time it was believed that the nitrogen cycle consisted of the process depicted over here, and this is a simplified scheme. So everyone believed it contains a nitrogen fixation, then the aerobic process of nitrification, where ammonium was oxidized to nitrite and to nitrate. And then they recognized the process of dissimulatory nitrate reduction to ammonium, a process that has also long been overlooked, and I believe we will hear a lot about that in the next talk. And then they recognized the process, or the anaerobic process of denitrification, where nitrite was being reduced to nitrite, and then to dinitrogen gas. Well, then in the 1940s and 1970s, it was proposed by several scientists that a microorganism was missing from the nitrogen cycle that could oxidize ammonium, either with nitrite or nitrate, to dinitrogen gas, and they based this on thermodynamical calculations. And one of these scientists was Engelbert Broda, and you can see his article on the screen. Well, these predictions were verified in the early 90s, when in an anaerobic bioreactor from a yeast factory in the Netherlands, it was found that ammonium was being converted to dinitrogen gas, anaerobically. And this process was called anammox, which is short for the anaerobic oxidation of ammonium. A few years later, also the organisms responsible for this process were enriched in a sequencing batch reactor, which you can see here over on the left. And this red color, that's the biomass. The first anammox organism was named Brocadia anammoxidans, and all the animal organisms still carry the candidatus status, because we cannot grow them in pure culture, so they are in enrichment cultures in the bioreactors. And we also found that they had a very slow generation time. Their doubling time is at the most 10 days, so you have to wait a really long time before you get this enrichment culture, at least 120 days, and then you get a culture with about 80% Anammox bacteria. And earlier someone said that if you had to wait 3 months for a culture, it's not suitable for a PhD project, but all of our PhDs work with Anammox, and so everyone has their own bioreactor. Most of them have two, because if you lose one, and we do quite often, then you still need your backup. And we all grow different species, so we have a huge lab full of bioreactors, and we all cherish them like they were our children. Well, since then, several genera have been described, and I'll just show them here so you know the names. So the Brocalia was the first one to be described, and then there's Cunenia. And maybe you'll pronounce these names differently, but this is how the Dutch people would pronounce them. And then there's the marine Anammox, which we call Scalindra. And there's two other genera that are very alike, and they were deposited in the database around the same time. And I would say they are actually the same genus. But one is called Yatenia asiatica, after our professor. And the other one is called Anammox globus propionicus. And that was written up by someone from our lab. Well, besides being a missing link in the nitrogen cycle for many years, these microorganisms defy some more biological concepts. They have a compartmentalized cell plan, and not just intracellular membranes, but really separate compartments. And they share this thread with other members of the phylum that they belong to, the planktomycetes. But all the different groups within the planktomycetes have a common cell plan, but then it's different between all the groups within the planktomycetes. So for Anammox bacteria, the cell plan is as follows. The cytoplasm is divided into three separate compartments, and each of these compartments is bounded by a separate bilayer membrane. And the innermost compartment, which you can see over here, is called the anammoxosome, and it occupies most of the cell volume, and we believe that this compartment is the place where the anaerobic oxidation of ammonium takes place. Another unique property is that the membrane lipids of all the membranes in Anammox bacteria contain unique molecules called lederane lipids. And what is so unique about these molecules? They contain cyclobutane rings, which you can see over here, and these form a sort of ladder structure, and that's why they were called lederanes. And because they have only been found in Anammox bacteria, we can use them as biomarkers in the search for Anammox bacteria in the environment. As you might have noticed, the anammoxosome membrane is in a curved configuration. And you can see that clearly in this electron microscopy picture over here. But I would like to illustrate this further with showing you an electron tomography movie of a thick section of an Anammox cell. So here you have a thick section of an Anammox cell, and you see a model that I made about all the different membranes in the cell. And in this brownish pinkish color is the anammoxosome membrane. And here is just only that membrane. And you can see that it's curved, and it even has very deep tubular protrusions of the membrane into the anammoxosome. I'll point it out earlier next time. So this is a dividing anammox cell. And again, the anammoxosome membrane is in the brownish color, and it's highly curved. And what you also might notice are the red particles inside the anammoxosome. And because they were so electron dense under the electron microscope, we used a technique called energy dispersive X-ray analysis to look at the elemental composition of these particles. And we found that they had very high levels of iron inside. And we believe that this iron might have something to do with the numerous cytochrome C's that Anammox proteins contain. So now I just want to wait for the next movie again. Yeah, here you see this very deep tubular protrusions of the membrane into the inside of the anammoxosome. And we think that this curvature is a means to enlarge the membrane area of the anammoxosome membrane for all the catabolic for the catabolic processes that occur, so that they have a higher or an enhanced metabolic activity. Well, the hypothesis that the animoxazome is used for anaerobic ammonium oxidation was based on the immunogold localization of one of the key enzymes of this reaction, namely the hydroxylamine oxidoreductase-like enzyme, which is responsible for making dinitrogen gas. And we showed that it was located inside the animoxazome. Actually, all the enzymes involved in the anaerobic ammonium oxidation contain cytochrome C proteins, as I mentioned before, the iron that we observe inside the animoxazome, which you can also very clearly see here. That are these black spots. That's, they're so electron dense, probably because of the iron. They are, well, we performed a cytochrome peroxidase stain to see where cytochrome C's were located. And this stain only stained the animoxazome, and there was an intense staining, and I hope you can see it clearly on the screen, on the inner side of the animoxazome membrane. So this further strengthened the hypothesis that the enzymes involved in the anaerobic oxidation of ammonium are predominantly located inside the animoxazome, and especially in close proximity of the membrane. Here you see a scanning electron microscopy picture of the way animox cells occur in the bioreactor. And because we use sequencing batch reactor, we kind of select for organisms that can stay inside the reactor, otherwise they will be flushed out with the effluent when it's pumped out of the reactor. And animox organisms tend to grow in very dense clusters, and they excrete some sort of polysaccharide material, which you can see here, this kind of spider web material, and they all stick together like that, which is also really annoying, because if you want to do experiments with them, you first have to isolate them from the reactor, because, as you may remember, they're not grown in pure culture. So when we want to do experiments with them to show that they can perform a certain process, we need to isolate them from the enrichment culture. And we have to break open these very dense clusters. And then we purify them with density gradient centrifugation and Perkle. The fact that animox bacteria can perform anaerobic ammonium oxidation makes them very valuable for industry. And in 2002, the first animox wastewater treatment plant was started in Rotterdam in the Netherlands. And also, these people had to be very patient because the reactor didn't do very much in the first 4 years. But then finally, in 2006, it became active. And it has now been running at a stable removal of about 500 kilograms of nitrogen per day. And it is used for the removal of ammonium from the wastewater of the city. Well, apart from all these interesting properties and the fact that they are available for industry, we wondered how important this process actually is in the environment. So we teamed up with scientists from the Max Planck Institute for Marine Microbiology in Germany, and they had available to them a very nice ship, which you can see here on the left. And one of my colleagues teamed up with them to search for animox in the marine system. And they went to the oxygen, or they searched for them in the oxygen minimum zones of both the Black Sea and the Benguela upwelling system. They used different methods to search both for the presence of animox cells and for animox activity. First of all, they made nutrient profiles. And you can see one over here on the left of the Benguela upwelling system, so that they knew where the oxygen minimum zone started. Here on the right side of this picture, you can see the oxygen concentration. And here, the oxygen concentration is multiplied by 10 to show you that this is where the oxygen minimum zone starts. And you can see that here, there is like a low level, a constant low level of ammonium and a very high level of nitrite. And this is the place where we would expect animox to most likely take place. So they used 15N labeling experiments, which you already heard a bit about before, to search for the animox process. And they used this to see how the nitrogen was being removed from the oxygen minimum zones, either via animox or via denitrification. And they found out that in the oxygen minimum zones, the nitrogen was being removed via the process of anaerobic ammonium oxidation. They also showed that deladrin lipids were present there. And with molecular analysis, they found that the animox bacteria belong to the marine genus Scalindua. And they were also detected with a technique that's called FISH, where you can detect specific species by the use of fluorescently labeled probes. So all of these findings pointed out that Anammox bacteria were present and were also active in the marine minimum oxygen zones. Well, Anammox bacteria have now been detected in numerous sites all over the world, and not only in wastewater treatment plants and in marine oxygen minimum zones, but also in the soil, both in freshwater samples, which you can see the blue spots with the red lines, and I hope I put them in the right places. I asked Google Earth for that. And then also in marine soils, the blue spots with the white lines. So they might also play a role in soil, but that has not been investigated yet. So 15 and labeling experiments have now been performed in several places. And based on these labeling experiments and also on red field ratios, it has been estimated that the Anammox process contributes up to 50% of the nitrogen removal in the marine system. So that's quite a lot, I think. Well, we also really wanted to have the marine Anammox organism in our laboratory. So one of my colleagues had a look at a molecular survey that was done on the abundance of Anammox bacteria all over the world, and he saw that they were very abundant in the Swedish fjord. So he went there and took samples from the upper layer of the sediment, which was at a depth of 180 meters, and he inoculated this in the sequencing batch reactor in the lab. And he ran it at 15 degrees, and he also added salt to the medium to simulate marine conditions. And then he had to wait for a year for it to become active. And as you can see here, he started in May, and in July, finally, Anammox process was occurring. And with this size of a bioreactor, we normally don't go above 45 millimolar nitrite concentration in the influent. So when he looked at the population inside the bioreactor, he saw that they indeed belonged to the Scalindua genus, and he had two different Scalindua species in his reactor. And they could perform, or the bioreactor performed, the anaerobic ammonium oxidation with nitrite, 2-dinitrogen gas, and had hydrazine as one of the intermediates, as do all the other Anammox organisms have. They also contained lateran lipids, and had the same cell plan as is known for all the other Anammox bacteria. There was, however, one difference. The Anammox cells in this reactor did not grow in these dense clusters that I showed with the scanning electron micrograph. But they did have hair-like extensions from the cell wall. And not all the cells had this, but 50% of the cells. And these hair-like extensions, they looked like some sort of pili-like appendages. So maybe this organism, or this Anammox organism, doesn't form clusters, but instead has these pili to attach to surfaces to not wash out of the reactor. And I've never before observed pili-like appendages in any of the other Anammox species. Well, to find out more about these intriguing Anammox organisms, we set out to sequence the genome of one of them from its enrichment culture. And for this purpose, we chose the Anammox bacterium Cunenia stuttgartiensis, and we took a rather classic approach for the sequencing of its genome. And this involves isolation of its DNA, and then you cut it into smaller fragments, and you clone these fragments into bacterial artificial chromosomes and plasmids, and then sequence the insert, and then you look for genes for which you are absolutely sure that they belong to Anammox, for example, the 16S, or known target genes, and then you try to fit together the puzzle. And this took us quite some years to fit it together, but finally we assembled the genome in 5 large contigs, and in total it was 4.2 megabases. And we do not know 100% sure how large the gaps are between the contigs, or how many gaps there actually are. But based on the genes that are present, or that we found in the genome, it is estimated that the genome is 98% complete. And the genome told us many things, and I would just like to speak about the main message it brought us, which has also been verified by additional experiments, and that is that Anammox bacteria are not the specialists that we always believed they were. They can actually use different electron acceptors and electron donors. They can actually make their own nitrite from nitrate while oxidizing small fatty acids, such as acetate and propionate. And they further use the acetyl-CoA pathway for CO2 fixation. So to summarize the Anammox part, and have to speed up a bit, Animal bacteria have unique properties, and we have assembled the genome of Kunenia from its enrichment culture. They are very versatile and not specialistic, as we believed, and they are possibly important in the global nitrogen cycle, but at least in the marine nitrogen cycle. So is there more in the nitrogen cycle? And here I'll go really fast, because we already know about Krenach iota. So if we look at the process of nitrification, it was always observed that the ammonium oxidation rate in a marine system could not be accounted for by all the bacterial ammonium oxidizers present, and that also here an organism was missing from the equation. And then the fact that Krenach iota are actually 20% of all the prokaryotic cells in the marine system, and the finding of the group of Martin Kunneke that Krenach iota could oxidize ammonium to nitrite, of course, makes it possible that they play a major role in oceanic nitrification. And maybe not only in the marine system, because they are also more abundant in soils than ammonia oxidizing bacteria, but it still has to be shown whether they really dominate with respect to the nitrification rate. So are microorganisms the only important players in the nitrogen cycle? Well, I don't know about important players, but I do know that there's one player in the nitrogen cycle that's not a microorganism. Because if we look at the process of denitrification, and then then the complete denitrification of nitrate to dinitrogen gas, it was found that this could also be performed by a eukaryote. And these eukaryotes are foraminifers, and it was found that they stored large quantities of nitrate into intracellular vacuoles, and that this nitrate was completely denitrified to dinitrogen gas. Well, first we thought that this was performed by microorganisms, either living on the outside of the foraminifers or inside. But when we looked for them, we could not find any microorganisms inside these organisms, and not enough outside that could account for the denitrification rate. So then one of our postdocs looked further into the cells, and actually the only thing that was that abundant that could account for the denitrification rate that we measured were either the mitochondria or the peroxisomes, but this is still under investigation. So what are foraminifers? They are unicellular eukaryotes, and the benthic forms, they have shells, which you might know as the White Cliffs of Dover, as you can see on the left, that are covered by the shells of foraminifers. And here is a scanning picture of the foraminifers that we investigated, and the one on the left is the one that we really used for our experiments. So now I would like to move over to the methane cycle. Well, in the methane cycle, methane is produced by the anaerobic process of methanogenesis, and this process is performed by archaea. And methane is further removed via an aerobic process performed by methanotrophic bacteria. It was also observed that a large part of the globally produced methane was actually oxidized to carbon dioxide anaerobically. And this is called reverse methanogenesis because it's an anaerobic process. But for a long time it was not found which organisms performed this process, until several groups found that a microbial consortium could couple the methane oxidation to sulfate reduction. And here I'm showing the results of Boetjes et al. And she found a microbial consortium consisting of an archaeon, here depicted in red, and sulfate-reducing bacteria, depicted in green. And she thinks that they coupled the methane oxidation performed by the archaeon to sulfate reduction performed by the sulfate-reducing bacteria. And here the sulfate-reducing bacteria would scavenge away intermediates of the methane oxidation. Well, because nitrite and nitrate are actually much better electron acceptors than sulfate, we wondered why this process was not found coupled to denitrification. So we went to look for this process in places where we thought it would most likely occur, and that would be pretty much any canal or ditch in the Netherlands, where you have a lot of methane coming up from the sediment and high levels of nitrite and nitrate due to agricultural activities in the environment. So we went to a canal in the Netherlands, and our PhD student, Ashna, and my supervisor, Mark Strauss, they took samples from the upper layer of the sediment and inoculated a sequencing batch reactor with it. under strictly anaerobic conditions, and Ashna provided a mineral medium without any organic compounds and only methane as an electron donor. And then she had to be even more patient than those working on Enemox, because it took 16 months before the reactor became active, but then it did perform the anaerobic oxidation of methane coupled to denitrification. When she looked at the biomass inside the reactor, she found that she had also enriched a microbial consortium consisting of archaea, depicted in pink, and bacteria, depicted in green. And when she did batch experiments with the reactor system and gave it methane, it would decrease and the nitrogen gas would appear. And both the decrease of nitrate and nitrite accounted for all the dinitrogen gas produced, so there was no oxygen involved in this process. And nitrite was preferred as a substrate above nitrate, because when the nitrite was depleted from the medium, the anaerobic methane oxidation would stop, and it would take about 10 or 20 hours before it would start up again, and then at the expense of nitrate. She made a clone library of the biomass, and she found only one archaeal sequence, and this sequence clustered in a group of methanogenic archaea over here. She found several bacterial sequences, but there was one dominant one, both in the clone library and also with the fish analysis, and this dominant bacterium clustered in a new phylum that was recently proposed, and it's called the NC10 phylum, and it contains only uncultured representatives. So what could be the possible mechanism of the anaerobic methane oxidation coupled to denitrification? Well, first we proposed that it was very much like the anaerobic methane oxidation coupled to sulfate reduction, so that the archaeon would perform reverse methanogenesis, so oxidize methane to carbon dioxide anaerobically, and that a denitrifier would reduce nitrite to dinitrogen gas. But then the archaeon disappeared from our enrichment system, and the process was still being performed under anaerobic conditions. We also added an inhibitor of methanogenic bacteria or methanogenic archaea to see if they really weren't involved in the process anymore, but it had no effect. So currently we are investigating alternative mechanisms that could be responsible for this process. We also went back into the environment to look for the dominant bacterium in the reactor system. And we went to a ditch nearby to the university and made a clone library there. And indeed, we could find back sequences that clustered in the NC10 phylum, which is over here. And here you can see it in a large group that were very similar to our enrichment culture. So to summarize, we have reactor systems that couple bacterial methane oxidation to the nitrification under anaerobic conditions. And we have enriched in these systems a new bacterium of the NC10 phylum. The archaeon does not play a process in this role anymore, and at present we do not know the biochemical mechanism. So with this, I would like to end my presentation and thank you for your time and your attention. And if you have any questions, I will do my best to answer them. Thank you. Yeah, that's true.
Does that provide a potential mechanism for soil analogs?
Yeah, I believe it could be, yeah. Yeah, I think it could, because it is not, of course, the preferred way, but they can make their own nitrite. And also in the marine system, it is hypothesized that when there's no nitrite, it is either provided by ammonium oxidizers or denitrifiers, reducing nitrate to nitrite, or Enemox itself. But this has never really been investigated. So, but I think it could be potentially... being performed in the soil. But as I have to stress again, there has been no research on this.